Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Civil unrest and the clergy. What role do and should religious leaders play in situations such as Ferguson or other crises? We'll be talking about that in a few minutes, but first, our Ferguson update. Many arrests, but no tear gas or rubber bullets overnight. Attorney General Holder is in town today for a firsthand look at the situation, and a grand jury begins to hear evidence today in the Michael Brown shooting in Ferguson. Let's get an update on the situation now from St. Louis Public Radio's Joe Manis joining us by phone. Joe, thanks for being with us.
Well, thanks for asking me.
Joe, how do you see the Holder visit?
Well, the Holder visit is in some ways, I think, to underscore to the local officials, especially some who are upset at the moment, that the federal government is paying close attention, that the Justice Department is committed to doing its own investigation into the death of teenager Michael Brown by a Ferguson police officer. There is this federal investigation, but there also is a parallel local investigation, and that's the investigation that's getting a lot of heat right now. St. Louis County Prosecutor Bob McCullough is overseeing that investigation, and there's some African-American leaders who and officials who have been very upfront that they don't want McCullough doing it for various reasons. Among them, they claim that McCullough has a conflict of interest because his father was a policeman who was killed in the line of duty by a black suspect about 50 years ago. And so they say that that, among other things, is among the reasons that they don't think that McCullough can be objective in dealing with this case, and they would like him to either recuse himself or Governor Jay Nixon to remove him. And Nixon made clear in a statement late last night that he will not remove McCullough, and McCullough is saying that he's not going to voluntarily step down, but if the governor tells him to, he'll do it. So there's this little dance between the two guys. But at the moment, McCullough is heading this investigation. The federal, their grand jury was to begin hearing witnesses today. The grand jury proceedings are secret, so they're not going to tell. They won't say who is appearing, other than they have said that they have called a number of witnesses. But people don't have to appear before a grand jury, so they don't know who all is showing up.
And we should point out that today is just the first meeting of the grand jury, that nothing likely is to be resolved as far as that investigation is concerned today.
Right, correct. Grand juries often take weeks or months, and they often hear more than one case. They're looking at evidence for a variety of things. And McCullough's staff had told me yesterday that this particular grand jury, which begins this week, was going to be hearing stuff on a number of cases, and that they expect it'll be months before they have finished hearing all the evidence from the shooting in Ferguson. Because instead of getting all the evidence together and then presenting it to the grand jury, which occasionally they do, in this case, they're giving the grand jury evidence as they get it. So that can be a longer process at the front end, but the idea is that it then is a shorter process at the back end. Rather than spending months collecting evidence and then convening a grand jury, this way the grand jury is expected to come up with some sort of decision this fall about the time that they will have finished collecting all the evidence.
Is there any chance that Attorney General Holder will be meeting with Mr. McCullough today?
Not that I have heard. That's one of the things that, frankly, I'm very keenly interested in, is whether McCullough's staff had told me yesterday that they had not heard of any plans of Holder to stop by. Of course, McCullough's in Clayton. Holder was doing some stops in North County, in Ferguson and at Flow Valley Community College, and then, from what I understand, he's going downtown, St. Louis, to meet with the FBI officials and federal prosecutors. So there's nothing on his schedule about appearing with McCullough, but things could change. So there is an effort on some ends. Senator Claire McCaskill was on national TV last night emphasizing her support for McCullough, but also her support for Holder's investigation. So there is some effort at some ends to try to get these investigations so that they're complementary and not combative between the two investigations. But in any case, you've got some local officials who are not happy about this. I was just talking to State Senator Jamila Nasheed, who has been collecting signatures to try to get the governor to take McCullough off the case. She is furious. She's furious with the governor for not doing it. She's furious with McCaskill for going on national TV and saying she supports the governor's decision. So there's some political fallout from all this that Holder may hear a little about, but this is something that'll go on for a while.
Well, we'll have to watch the rest of the day and see how all of that unfolds. And, of course, it's going to go well beyond today, as you have indicated. Joe Manis of St. Louis Public Radio, thanks so much for being with us. And I'm sure we'll be touching base with you often in the not-too-distant future. Thanks.
Well, thank you.
Right. Now on to the impact of religious leaders during the Ferguson turmoil. Area places of worship have been center stage during the crisis. They are typically places the community seeks in times of strife, places where religious as well as civic and political leaders connect with the people and help guide them through the troubled waters. That's certainly been the case in Ferguson. But what impact do and should religious leaders have on these events? Are words from the pulpit heard in the street? If so, how are they received? If not, why not? We're talking about all of that on today's program. With me in studio, Reverend Willis Johnson is the pastor of Wellspring Church in Ferguson. Reverend B.T. Rice is pastor of New Horizon Seventh-day Christian Church in Cool Valley. Rabbi Susan Talvey is senior rabbi at Central Reform Congregation. She joins us by phone from New York. Thank you all so much for being with us. Nice to have you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Reverend Johnson, let me begin with you. What do you see as the role of the clergy in a crisis like the one in Ferguson?
Well, very much so. We are called and expected to be present, to be accountable to not only those who we serve, but particularly to the larger issues that exist, particularly in this case, a social justice issue. And a loss of life in a community that is in trauma. There are questions, and in our faith tradition, that is allowed. Matter of fact, I in the tradition encourage it. It is where we worship and we find our strength in that faith and in our understanding. And so I think our natural call and the natural responsibility, both of our faith and of our roles as leaders, draw us into service, to be present, and to be accountable.
Yeah. Reverend Rice, same question to you. How do you see it?
Well, I think the church historically has a responsibility to be peacemakers. Along with being comforting to congregations and to individuals, we must be peacemakers, and we must find a way that we can join in and offer some solace, but yet at the same time, we have a responsibility to make sure that justice rolls down like water and righteousness like a mighty stream. So we have two roles. One, we must try to keep the peace, and two, we must make sure that justice is always acquired.
Well, the peace has not been kept. Does that reflect some sort of failure on the part of the clergy?
I think so. I think that we've heard many voices in this whole confusing situation and unfortunate situation. Certainly our hearts go out to the Brown family for this loss, and the way that it was done is just horrible and deplorable. But at the same time, I don't think the clergy has really spoken out with one voice. Now, let me clarify that. There's been several clergy, along with Reverend Johnson, that's been boots on the ground. They've been there night and day and tried to bring peace to the crowd. But we need to hear one voice, I think, that comes from the holistic clergy around our community that certainly has a statement to make and has a position to take.
There has been plenty of talk, and Rabbi Susan Talvey, I want to come to you now. I have a quote from you saying, there's been enough talk, we know what we have to do. And you are responding there to an article entitled, Why Jews Should Care About Ferguson. What do you mean, there's been enough talk, we know what we have to do, and what is it that we have to do?
Well, you know, I mean, we know what the issues are. We know that the structure of the county, the fact that Ferguson gets all its money from a lot of its budget from traffic tickets. We know that there's economic disparity. We know that you know, there's a lot of people working without a living wage. And we know a lot of these issues. We know that the segregation that exists in our community only further keeps people under the illusion that, you know, what's happening in Ferguson doesn't, you know, isn't really affecting people in Crestwood. We know that's not true. And, you know, that illusion that a lot of people are living under, I think, is another place for clergy to really be involved. I mean, I think we need to move from this confrontation to conversation a little bit more. But I really also can't say enough about especially the African-American clergy, including my sister Tracy Blackman and, of course, Reverend Johnson, all the people who have been able to stand with the protesters, identify the people who are the troublemakers, and say, you know, peaceful protest has been really important here, and keep them safe, and talk them into remembering why they're there on the front line.
But, you know, the things that you have outlined, Rabbi Talvi, are things that we've been talking about for a long time, most of our lifetimes. And yet when crises such as Ferguson go away, so to speak, in terms of being on the front page, we go back to life as normal and don't talk this way again until the next crisis.
Not this time, right?
Well,
that's right.
Reach out to my fellow clergy. That's
sure.
Our job now. Our job is to not, it's enough. Enough. We can't afford to lose any more young black men. We just can't. They're our future. They're our hope. You know, I've been marching with them from the fast food restaurants. These organizers, you know, they're terrific, and they're the future, and they're beautiful. And we just can't afford to lose them. I feel like it's a genocide going on right now. And we just can't afford to lose them. And we have to give them hope, and we have to teach them their rights and make sure they're registered to vote.
Let me turn to Reverend Johnson now. You were responding to the rabbi as she spoke. What about this notion? We talk a lot about things like this when they're happening, and then there seems to be a forgetfulness period where we don't talk about them again until they happen again.
Well, we do that, and there's probably a myriad of reasons why we do that, particularly one, because it's arduous. It's hard. It's heavy. It's tiring. And it's easy to, when you put it down, not to pick it back up. But no, we have a generation of young people and individuals who have lived through the generations that are so tired that they don't want to let it. They don't want to let go. They don't. They know the history. They know the experience of all of this happening, and they won't allow it. And so that is why, very much so, I said we are now being evaluated and not only being present, standing with, not saying what's right or wrong necessarily, but affirming where they're at, individuals. But then holding, they meaning young people, this generation, are holding us accountable. They won't let us leave the table. Matter of fact, they're not even inviting us if we're not serious about sustaining and being and engaging for the long term.
Reverend Rice, that's a key point, reaching the young people. They have a tendency not to listen to people who are older, an earlier generation. How do you reach them?
I have found, to my surprise, really, that young people will listen. I went into a crowd here a day or two after the shooting, and it was rather boisterous and voiceful, and they were concerned about what had taken place, and it was right in front of the Ferguson Police Department. And when I went in and people said, let's listen, the young people listened. Now, there was an antagonist on board that was saying, let's don't listen to him, he's old school. But I was quite surprised at how the young people said, no, we want to hear what they're reaching out for leadership.
Uh-huh.
And they want somebody to lead. And that's where the clergy has failed. I believe that we really need to lead. We need to be out there and lead. But there is another issue, too. This power struggle is not easily given over. There are those that want to keep the status quo. They want to keep this things going the way they are, where you have an overabundance of leadership in the white community and unwilling to share that leadership again with the African American community. So that issue too has to be attacked and I think hit hard too.
I want to get to that a little later in the program. I have some feelings about that, and some of our our listeners do as well. We'll get to that issue, but I do have to take a break now. We are talking about the role of the clergy in the situation in Ferguson in particular, but in times like this crisis that happened elsewhere, and they've happened all so often in our recent history, the role of the clergy in dealing with these crises. My guests in studio, you just heard from Reverend B.T. Rice, pastor of New Horizons Seventh-day Christian Church in Cool Valley. With me also in studio is Reverend Willis Johnson. He's the pastor of the Wellspring Church in Ferguson. And joining us by phone from New York is Rabbi Susan Talvey of Central Reform Congregation. Back to continue this conversation in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. We'll be continuing our conversation on the role of the clergy in the tumultuous situation in Ferguson. But before we continue with that discussion, here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following today. U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder is in the area to meet with community leaders and federal investigators about Michael Brown's death in Ferguson. A small group of protesters gathered in Clayton, where a grand jury is convening to consider possible charges against the Ferguson police officer who fatally shot Michael Brown. The roughly two dozen protesters chanted, prayed, and held signs outside the St. Louis County Justice Center, calling for County Prosecutor Bob McCullough to relinquish control of the case to a special prosecutor, among other things. And it's been announced that Michael Brown's funeral will be held on Monday at the Friendly Temple Missionary Baptist Church in St. Louis. Join St. Louis Public Radio this afternoon for local and regional news and throughout the day on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Now back to our conversation. Joining me in studio, the Reverend Willis Johnson, pastor of the Wellspring Church in Ferguson. Reverend B.T. Rice is pastor of New Horizons Seventh-day Christian Church in Cool Valley. Joining us by phone is Rabbi Susan Talvey, I should say, of Central Reform Congregation. Before we continue our discussion with them, I'd like to bring in the voice of the Catholic Church, from the Catholic Church, and that would be Auxiliary Bishop Edward Rice from the Archdiocese of St. Louis. I talked with him earlier today and asked him about the role of the faith community in the Ferguson situation.
I'm hoping that the role of the faith community is, number one, to for a calm and make sure that we have safety, especially, I'm thinking, for the children. You know, I think it's scandalous that the kids are out of school. And I understand the concerns, you know, but the kids are suffering. I think it's the role of the faith community to try to get a sense of calm back into the community. And let's get our kids back into school, because education is the key to the future.
Well, it's one thing to promote calm and ask for calm, but there has been very little calm. And last night, I guess, was something of a turning point.
Mm-hmm.
How do you go beyond just requesting that people slow down a little bit?
Yeah, you know, and that's it. You just use a good slow down a little bit. It's difficult, especially when a community is hurting. It's difficult to let the process happen. And I know that's difficult when you have a whole segment of the population who feels like they're outside of the process. But to have trust that those who are in these positions are going to do what they need to do, and they're going to do it responsibly, and have trust in that.
One of the things that I've been wondering about is the voices coming from inside the church. Are they being heard outside the church? And if not, how do you make those voices heard?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. You know, I was up there Sunday. I went up there. I didn't go up there as a PR stunt. I went there. Certainly, I'm a bishop in the church for the Archdiocese of St. Louis. So in a sense, wherever I go, I represent more than myself. I went up there to pray. I was there on Florissant where they were protesting. The Archbishop was up there as well. We don't do these things as PR acts, you know. It's to pray and to be with the people. And I just think that's what we have to do now. The faith community has to remind these people that there's an element here that cannot be negotiated, and there's a peace that the government cannot give, and that comes from faith.
A very tangible outreach this evening, from what I understand. There is going to be an event this evening the Archdiocese is sponsoring. Is that correct?
Yes, we have a 5 o'clock Mass at the Cathedral. Everyone is welcome to that Mass, and we're going to take up a collection for those who are needy up in that area to help them. I understand the food pantry is doing quite well now once again. And then on Saturday, we're having a mass in honor of St. Louis with our young people. They're all invited. We're asking for canned food to help restock the shelves of the food pantry. It's a call to come together. You know, it's very easy to let what divides us divide us. But the call of faith is the call of the community to come together.
As a St. Louisan, how do you look at what's been happening?
It's not a surprise. I was born in 1960, so all of the protests of the 60s, those are moments in history, in the history books. But we've always been divided in that sense racially. I'm from St. Louis, and anybody who says it's not, I don't think they're being realistic. I think, but this is a real call right now for us to come together and look at the issues. Some of those issues are economic. Some of those issues involve education and just simple respect and the dignity of the human person, which the church is always trying to proclaim. So it's a call now for us to realize where we've come and maybe where we've become lax in some areas, and we need to recommit ourselves to the cause of unity.
Okay. I have one final question, given what you just said. You're talking about going back to the days of the Civil Rights Movement. That's 50 years ago. Are we as a community a day late and a dollar short in dealing with these issues? I mean, this has been festering for a long, long time.
Sure it has been. And again, that's why I said if people don't recognize that, I don't know where they've been, because it has been an issue in our city. I think the Catholic Church, and this is my perspective, I think we have a lot of credibility with the African-American community. We have schools in those neighborhoods. We have Cardinal Ritter Prep, which is an African-American school. We've partnered with the business community to support that. All of our schools are supported by our people and our parishes. I think we have an amount of credibility within the African-American community. Can we do more? Certainly we can. But I think with that credibility that we do have, I think we need to move forward and to be that voice of unity.
That's Auxiliary Bishop Edward Rice of the Archdiocese of St. Louis in a conversation we had about an hour ago. Reverend Johnson, let me turn to you. Anything you would react to with regard to what the bishop said? One of the things that strikes me about this conversation, we've had several of them this week, I use the expression a day late and a dollar short. It seems to me that that's exactly where we are.
I believe that to be a fair, commentary and maybe even a critique. You have to weigh that against the fact that you're talking to people who make their business and their stake their lives in this idea that there's always the hope.
The collective we, by the way. I'm not pointing a finger at you.
No, I understand. But we remain optimistic and hopeful. We understand that part of the faith tradition and life reality is that there's struggle, that we're striving towards something. And so, yes, at some point we have to stop saying, I hope that my child and my grandchildren don't have to endure this. That's what my grandparents said about me. And here I am hoping that for my children and grandchildren. But I think we cannot let the work, we cannot let that stop us. But if I may, we have to move past celebrating what we've done and what we're doing specific to certain groups and communities. And at a certain point, even though we are strong people of faith, we have to show something tangible and something real to go along with it. And that is what is not being received, or that is what the critique is out on the streets right now. You're talking about it, but we're not seeing it actualize. So I need a job, okay? And I know you have a program and you taught me, but I got to get a job. I got to have I have to see the miracle. This is very pragmatic. At a certain point, after it's philosophical and prophetic, it has to be practical and then put it in my hand or put in a place in a way that I can grab hold of it.
Reverend Rice?
With all due respect to the bishop, I disagree. I'm tired of hearing words like, let's slow down and we must come together. but they become buzzwords and they have no really effect whatsoever. Because after this one is gone, then we'll say the same thing next time. You see, when you say let's slow down, how can we say that when this boy lay in the streets for 4.5 hours and just laying there, you know, uncovered for an hour of that time? It's not time to slow down. How do you say slow down when the Chief Jackson comes on the air and announces the name of the officer along with the fact that this boy had some, I call it shoplifting, some call it strong-armed robbery, but it looked more to me like shoplifting, and then you say slow down. You know, it's not time to slow down. It's time for how can we slow down when the prosecutor could easily just say, because of the tension of this case, I'll step aside. But to take a strong role, well, this is my job. I'm not going to take a step aside unless the governor. And we get all bumbled up in these little issues, but the main issue is lost. This kid was shot dead in the streets, and something has to be done now. And the power, by the way, is the one that's have to make the move, and they're the ones saying, let's slow down. I think that it's time for us to speed up and to make these things happen that needs to be happened in our community. How do you have a community of 60-some percent African-American and hardly no representation in any of those particular areas? So I know I'm going long, but I'm...
That's why you're here.
Yeah, okay.
All right. Let me get Rabbi Susan Talvey to respond to that. I think there were some very, very cogent points made there, Rabbi Talvey.
I agree with Reverend Rice. You know, to be a great democracy, we need an engaged populace. Well, the people are engaged. Maybe Michael Brown, a blessed memory, maybe his greatest legacy to us is that he woke us up and he engaged a whole new group of people who are not going to sit back, who we hope will get, and this is where maybe the clergy and the organizers can get involved. We can't let St. Louis go back to sleep. We have to stay awake. We have to get organized. We have to get those great community organizers out there from Jobs with Justice and all these other wonderful organizations we have in St. Louis, and let's organize. Let's make sure that we understand. I mean, Reverend Johnson said jobs. This is so important. And not just jobs, but good-paying jobs, living wage jobs that have benefits. You know, every human being that in this country that works full-time should get a living wage. We start, you know, with something we can manage, and we don't allow for people to profile good people. Yeah. You know, you alienate the very people that can help you keep the streets safe. So there's two things we can do right there, and we have the resources in St. Louis to do it. And now the populace is engaged and awakened, and I'm telling those wonderful young people on the street that were directing traffic, that were keeping people safe, they were fixing cars, they were handing out water. There was what that Thursday night, you know, was magic, because there weren't a lot of any troublemakers out there yet, and the people took back the street, and they showed us that an engaged population, an engaged Ferguson, you know, can really make the magic happen.
You know, I think I had a telephone call yesterday from one of our listeners, a gentleman by the name of Frank Sedmek, and he raised an issue that I think is something we can talk about briefly here, is right in line with what Rabbi Talvey's been saying and what Reverend Rice has been saying. Let's listen to this clip from Frank Sedmek.
I wonder how many of these people up there, you know, good people and everything, that aren't registered to vote. You know, you could absolutely change the landscape of this country quicker than anything if we got these people just engaged and get them registered, get them to the polls. This is what they did 50 plus 60 years ago during with Martin Luther King and the Freedom Riders and all of this, and I don't understand why this hasn't been emphasized more.
That's listener Frank Sedmek. Reverend Rice, let me turn to you. what he's really talking about is, you know, you've got, as we all know, you've got an overwhelmingly African-American population in Ferguson, and you've got a lily-white government administration. Folks there aren't voting, and they aren't – is this a role for the church? Let me get to the point. Is really to get people registered and get them to the polls to change at least this part of the dynamic?
It is not only a role of the church, Don. It is the role of the church. As I said in my opening statement, our responsibility is to bring peace, and along with that peace comes an equalization in the community, and to where people have a right to have representation across the board. But that's not going to come without a struggle. It never has. And even back in the days of civil rights, people say, "Well, you burned out your own community," but at the same time, you can see where that we've been more involved in the community as a result of that. So I'm certainly not here advocating that those are the things to do. I think that there ought to be peaceful protests. But yes, we must get involved. But on the other side, our involvement has to include they, meaning the white community, to be involved. What interests me most is if you listen to a more conservative talk show host, whether it be radio or TV or even in the newspaper, you find comments that says, "Well, I don't understand why, you know, let the process go. People are innocent until they are found guilty." And yet, at the same time, on the other side, if you listen to the more verbose and African-American community, why don't they arrest him? Why don't they go ahead and put him in jail? But you can't say that those people are all mean or racist, but it is how they view the situation. And there's a clear dichotomy between our white community and African-American community. And that's the sore that we have to deal with. And it's going to have to come from a heart of honesty and say, yes, I'm willing to do whatever it is, to bring about a solace in our community. But until that time, that divide is going to Rabbi Talvi and I, for years, we've been out there working for justice and peace and really haven't seen much progress as we've gone along. That's my view.
Mm-hmm. You know, it just occurs to me, you know, I'll probably get in trouble for saying this, but we can call for common, we can call for prayer, but how is that going to resonate in somebody who doesn't have any money in the wallet? You know, mm-hmm. I'm talking about tangible things that you can do and I can do, we all can do.
If you were in church, Don, I'd have to say, can I get a witness from that? Because, amen. That's exactly what the car problem is.
All right. Did you want to say something?
I definitely want to yield to my elders in terms of who have been in this struggle and who have defined it and framed it well. I will say that generationally, how we see the right to vote and how it's defined in terms of its power is very different across the generations. And it's not an excuse that people don't vote. Trust me, I understand. I live in the community. I watched the last two elections or so. What I've come to realize in talking with young people and evaluating and analyzing the situation is that we have a generation or two or three that understand voting as an act of empowerment. And when you have a group of people who feel disempowered, who have been viewed as disingenuous in all of who they are and their personhood, you can't simply think that the excitement, the motivation, the necessity to go and operate through a system or a means that is not empowering or viewed to be empowering is going to do that. And so, yes, the church has a role in articulating and educating and engaging those who are disconnected, disenfranchised. But this is really the first time, honestly, in North County, in Ferguson, on West Florissant, where this many young people have had any contact with somebody from a church, has had any contact with any of small or large in terms of the scale of our churches, magnitude of our ministry and our personalities. This is the most people that many of us have had in our churches if we just go down to West Florissant.
This is your chance, mm-hmm. then. This is really your chance. Yeah. Susan, I have to take a break, but very quickly, do you want to respond to that? This whole part of the conversation?
I just think there's been great church in the street, finally, and it's been very exciting. And I also believe that we have to remember Dr. King's legacy. It wasn't just to preach. It was to empower people and to build the trust again. We lost for 50 years, we lost the trust that voting and can make a difference in the community. We have to build that trust back again, and we have to tell them, we have to make sure they know their voices are being heard, that we're listening, and that we care, and that we're going to respond. I'm not exactly sure what that response looks like, but I think we need to figure out how we can keep them engaged in productive and positive ways and let them know we're listening and that we're willing to make sacrifices for the common good and get out of our own way, out of our own self-interest, and really sacrifice for the common good here.
I'm going to bring another voice into this conversation in just a moment, but I have to take another break. We also have a number of callers. I'll ask them to stand by. We'll get to as many calls as we can when we come back. We're talking about the role of the clergy, in particular reference to the situation currently in Ferguson. Let's take that break. Come back in just a minute. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again. Welcome back. We'll continue our conversation with regard to the role of the clergy in the situation taking place now in Ferguson and the role of the clergy, quite frankly, in other crises that emerge from time to time. A new voice into this conversation now will come from Faizan Syed, Executive Director of the Council on American-Islamic Relations, or CARE, here in St. Louis. Faizan, thank you so much for being so patient, waiting for your turn.
Oh, thank you for having me on the show.
What is your take on what's going on, and what is the role do you feel that the council might play, your council might play, in situations such as the one in Ferguson?
Well, I'll answer your second question first. One of the benefits of the crisis that's going on in Ferguson and the tragedy there is that after Michael Brown was shot, we were able to get all the Islamic centers in St. Louis. There's about 18 of them. And along with a lot of the other organizations that exist within the city of St. Louis that are run by Muslims, and we were able to get them all to sign on to alert that we sent to the Brown family in order to show our condolences with the family. This is fairly unprecedented in the sense that we've never been able to get so many groups and organizations on board. So that's at least one way that we can get, as the council, that we're able to bring the Muslim community together as a show of solidarity and support to seek justice for Michael Brown. Beyond that, though, on more practical terms and more meaningful terms, one of the strategies that we're trying to employ within the city of Ferguson is an economic strategy. And that strategy is that a lot of the businesses that are in Ferguson are owned and operated, some by people who live in the area, but also a lot by people who don't necessarily live in that area. Even there's a lot of Muslim businesses that are there that have been looted and targeted and vandalized and attacked even. So part of our strategy is, how do you create a civic-minded businessman, meaning that how do you have a business in this area, such as Ferguson or other parts of the city, where the family who owns that business doesn't necessarily live in that area, they live somewhere else. So the money that that business is generating is benefiting the community somewhat, but really a lot of the money is being taken out of that area. So part of our strategy right now is to speak at least to a lot of the Muslim businesses and find ways meaningful that they can actually invest their money back within their communities, so that way the money that they're generating from their business doesn't always get siphoned out of the community, but rather gets invested in the community. Actually, Rabbi Talvi, she knows very well, a good example of this is Yitman Market, which is further in the city. And, you know, the owner of that business, he was able to work with the community in order to bring the gangs and the neighborhood together to reduce the violence in that area. I think this type of civic-mindedness is something that at least our community, and especially the Christian community or the Jewish community or anybody else economically, can try to get the business owners to have a civic mind, so that way they don't think of their area or their business just a way of making money, but as a responsibility to give back to their communities as well.
You know, it's one thing to have a strategy phase on. It's another thing to maintain a certain degree of momentum to implement that strategy. And that's what's so often missing from these situations, is once the crisis is over, the momentum just stops.
Yeah, sadly, sometimes the momentum does stop. But if you're able to change the mind of an individual, let's say a business owner, to realize that his responsibility isn't just to go and open up business, make money, take that money and put it into West County or other parts of the city where he or she might be living, but rather they really need to look at their neighborhood as their as their neighborhood, the way the business is operating. And if we can create that mind shift, even if it's just with at least the Muslim community that own businesses there, then at least that's a start in the right direction. Because I think one of the challenges of living in somewhat of a capitalistic society is that people look at their business as a form of making money. But it needs to be more than that. It needs to be, okay, I'm going to make profit from my business, but also I'm living in a neighborhood where the profit that I'm making, I should also give back in a meaningful way. Maybe not in charity. Maybe it can be to bring neighborhoods together. Maybe it can be to employ more people. Maybe it can be to invest in other businesses in that area. So I think trying to create that mind change amongst business owners in that area is fundamental to the future growth of Ferguson itself, because of course many people are asking for jobs and demand that, you know, they have an opportunity to work. Well, that can't happen if all the businesses that, not all, but a significant portion of the businesses that operate in that area, you know, in essence are really taking hundreds of thousands of dollars away from that city into other cities. So that's at least one component that we're trying to work on.
Well, Faizan, I want to thank you so much for giving us your voice in this conversation and giving us your input on what you think should be happening. I hope folks are listening to you, too, because what you're talking about, the economic factor, is certainly an important one. Thank you so much for being with us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Reverend Johnson, your thoughts about what does the Muslim community have any influence in Ferguson?
Oh, yes. Yes. I mean, very much so. And I'm all for cooperative economics. And I think the economic strategy, not to be to offend or direct any one group, I think we have to look at the continuum and the spectrum of which we're doing economic development in Ferguson. I've tried to inform people why they've been protesting both on West Florissant and directly in front of the police station, that a majority of the businesses that we've been kind of shutting down and affecting our minority owned and business women businesses on both South Florissant and on West Florissant. At the same time, and this has been a conversation that Pastor Rice has been a part of, and he knows my mentor, Congressman Cleaver, who was a pastor when I was a teen in Kansas City. One of the challenges we faced many times was not about who owned businesses, but what the businesses were. And we need to diversify respectfully the nature of the economy in which we have in our community, because also what we produce or what we're presenting to the populace in terms of services and goods need to be as equally healthy and representative and nurturing or developmental as even just simply putting forth money and being benevolent, which is all of our challenge and charge in all of our faith tradition.
You know, Susan Talvey, I see a great symbolism in the fact that I know that you've worked with Faizan in the past. And I suppose people might say, if Muslims and Jews can work together, then anybody can work together.
Not only just Muslims, but Palestinians. You know, Faizan was referring to an amazing hero of St. Louis who owns the Yateman Market. And you know, we do a lot of work together, it's made a difference in that neighborhood. It's made a difference in the neighborhood. It's saving lives. It really is. It's turning a neighborhood around. It's empowering the neighborhood. And, you know, his point is just brilliant. It's that idea, again, about giving back to your neighborhood, about you know, we have 1 degree of separation. The problem I feel in St. Louis all the time is this illusion of separation. People think they can live in their own little communities, in their own little worlds, that Ferguson isn't about them. It's about all of us. And if we don't really feel the impact of that and respond to that, we're going to just have violence. It's going to keep erupting everywhere, and nobody is immune from that. So the notion of businesses in that neighborhood, which is, you know, what he said so beautifully, giving back to that neighborhood, being a part of that neighborhood as Zuri Masri does at the Yateman Market, really being a responsible business owner and citizen can make all the difference in St. Louis.
I think of John Donne, no man is an island.
Yeah.
Reverend Rice?
I appreciate what the rabbi has said, and also what Reverend Willis has said, but I, quite frankly and forthrightly, I think those are diversionary things right now. Those are a part of the SOAR. That's those items, or economic development is a part of the SOAR. But right now we have a hemorrhaging going on, and we need to stop the hemorrhaging. How do we stop the hemorrhaging? And that is, number one, we have to have a good representation as far as the prosecuting attorney. There would be nothing wrong in sensitivity to the community for him to step aside and allow. That would just be a sensitivity move. Number two, we have to make sure that those that are giving these reports to our community and to the community are doing it with a balanced report, a balanced report. By that I mean that you can't have the chief of police for Ferguson making statements that the individual, Ron Jackson, who has been placed in charge of the security, knows nothing about. So it undermines what he's trying to do. So it just still, it goes right back to the fact that we have bleeding going on in our community that must stop before we get to the economic development, before we get to the education. Let's be fair. Let's make sure that that this officer is charged. Let's make sure that he gets the same treatment that that Michael Brown would receive. If Michael Brown would have shot this police officer, Michael Brown would be in jail. So I don't understand why we are trying to skirt around that. We need to deal with that openly and fairly. And now I'm hearing talk about, well, this might take 2 months or it might take 3 months. That's not helping to stop the bleeding in our community that's going on right now. We need to have some open, fair justice in place. And those decisions are made not in our community, but outside of our community. So that's what I think that we really need to be dealing with.
This hour has moved along very, very quickly. I want to bring in at least one caller. Marvin at Hazelwood, it looks like he has something that might be very helpful to the conversation. Marvin, go on, but be quick, please.
Oh, I was wondering if there's a way to use the momentum, fast-track it, to register these young protesters out there, and educate the young generation, because the next generation under them, this can happen again, and that generation will be all over again. And once the decision goes either way, if it goes for the officer, I don't want to see it just die. And, you know, the media gone and everything. And also, I believe the local media ought to get involved in the community also. You're part of the community, too.
Marvin,
you have suggestions. There's a lot of things you guys see, and you can, you know, come up with good ideas and suggestions to help.
Marvin, let me stop you there, because that brings us to our final point. We'll have to go very, very quickly with all three of you. I'll start with you, Reverend Johnson. What next? I mean, what do you have to do next?
Well, as Rabbi mentioned, I've been saying the same thing. We need to understand that confrontation is real. We need to continue to keep the questions going. We need to continue to press so that we expedite a lot of what's happening. But then we need to be not only in conversation, but be working to come up with something instructive in the action. I don't have all the answers. I don't have all the resolve. I wish we had pixie dust and we can sprinkle on this and this thing goes away. But we do have to find ways to get a population, a generation of people, a community of people who have felt disenfranchised and disempowered, feeling like they are empowered. And unfortunately, very quickly to that gentleman's question, the only way that we're going to be able to register those young people is not because we didn't give them a piece of paper and a pen to sign. They have to believe that the system in which they're going to now engage in enlisting is actually going to work for them.
Susan Talvey, let me turn to you. From your perspective, what's next?
Well, I think that's true. I trying to put those two ideas together. What is it going to take to build back the trust of this community that has woken up, especially that generation? What do we need to do to make sure that they know that we mean business? And the thing, business as usual, is going to change. We're not going to put up with this kind of double standard anymore. We're not going to put up with the kind of racism that is, you know, causing such a terrible divide and, two different laws for one people.
Let me give Reverend Rice the last word. You've got about 45 seconds.
When you say what's next, we need a special prosecutor to come in. Bob McCullum needs to step aside for the good of the community. Number two, we need to allow the Ron Jackson to do his job with the cooperation of the entire law enforcement community. And number three, we need to make sure that this officer is charged just like any other citizen would be charged, and then let it go through the due process of law. Those are things that I think that need to happen immediately.
We're going to have to end it on that note. You just heard from Reverend B.T. Rice, and also with him in studio and me is Reverend Willis Johnson of the Wellspring Church in Ferguson. Reverend Rice is with the New Horizons Seventh-day Christian Church in Cool Valley. Rabbi Susan Talvey of Central Reform Congregation has joined us by phone from New York. Thank you all so much for being with us. I wish we had more time. Thank you all. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll take a look at how educators at the different age levels are dealing with the issues surrounding the Ferguson shooting, talking with their students about this. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. And a reminder that you can find updates on the situation in Ferguson throughout the day at stlpublicradio.org and this afternoon on 90.7 FM. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.